Check, 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 check. Check, 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 check. Good.
Let's see. No, you're just a little
get another check.
Eight checks are enough.
I'm still loud.
You're always loud.
Yeah, there. Thank you.
Mine's in my
office. Yeah, that's a cash correction. My phone going off at OrcoPax.
Oh, we edited that out. They'll never know.
Yeah, okay, good.
That killed about 10 minutes right there.
They'll never know.
Shut it down.
Well, I was listening to the edit on that. You did a good job.
Thank you.
It flowed very, very well. Okay, ready to do a countdown?
Ready.
Go for it.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up.
Welcome to Stampshire Here Today, podcast number 17. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Tom, Jeff, and our guest, Linz, Stamp News, and Scott Publishing Editor, Chad Snee. And I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stampshire Here Today and on Twitter at StampshowHT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news, the Jenny controversy deepens, hashtag stamp stories 2015, and our expert topic of the week is an open dialogue with our guest Chad Snee. Great news! Linz reports that 3 more upright $2 Jenny invert paints have been found. More like gifted by the USPS for ordering from the fulfillment center, who now claims that no more sheets will be given away. This brings the count to 23. Lifetime philatelist and fellow stamp enthusiast Dave B. Robinson chimed in on the issue with a very unique perspective. Mr. Robinson spent himself over $40,000 at USPS to actually find a right side up sheet and was successful at doing so. His sheet was reported by Linz as the 18th sheet found. He claims that he and his wife had great fun in the endeavor, and they did it for the enjoyment rather than the monetary gain, since after selling a sheet at auction, they came rather close to breaking even, and does not regret partaking the search for the golden ticket, a reference to the Gene Wilder classic Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. However, he does express quite a bit of ire directed at the USPS for their actions of running, in his opinion, an exclusive sweepstakes for which he was never given the opportunity to participate in. His article, found at StampshireHereToday.com in our show notes, was so expressive it elicited a response from the USPS, who claims it was simply an oversight and that they had good intentions to forward the stamp collecting hobby. Which side are you on? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter. So, the count is 23, and 3 of those we're going to have to name after the random employee.
Yeah.
When they print 5,000 of them and destroy the market.
I cannot believe that there are people who remember the lottery for the West sheets.
Legends of the West.
Legends of the West sheets. And they looked at this and thought, yeah, let's go ahead and do this. Or was this just one guy in a cubicle somewhere? And if it was one guy in a cubicle somewhere, how did he have access to 3 sheets? I think that this is...
Well, if this was part of their plan all along, then their press release saying that they had put all 100 of them randomly in the stock was incorrect. So somewhere along the lines, either they didn't communicate their plans between the left hand and the right hand, or they were trying to do something and just not tell anybody about it, which never seems to work out, because if they let people know, people will buy these things. I inadvertently participated in the lottery because I purchased sheets from...
Yeah, so
the fulfillment center. Every time I bought some, I apparently was entered in the drawing without my knowledge.
Perhaps. No word from the Postal Service on that score. I mean, when we reported about that first giveaway sheet, I mean, they very quickly told us, their spokespeople in D.C. told us that that's it. We sent out 3, but no more. So I wonder, what if there hadn't been any initial reporting, if that first finder hadn't called us and told us what was going on?
Yeah, but what about
there
the
been others?
What about the report that I heard that they were actually not randomly inserted, but some of the larger post offices with high traffic and high expected purchase rates of these things were actually on a short list of where some of these were shipped, so that they would be actually be found early on in the high turnover and high purchase rates in the larger post offices.
So it would seem, Scott.
I think that's more rumor.
Because they didn't have anything to say about that, did they? Or were they ever asked?
Well, you're
attributing, it's not in their best interest to admit it.
You're attributing them skill levels, which I don't think they possess.
But if they weren't randomly inserted, if they were randomly inserted after the shipments were prepared to these certain post offices, instead of being randomly inserted prior to,
well, then it's not random.
Exactly.
Yeah, if it's like, okay, we've got 10,000 going to Philadelphia here, throw two of them in there, that's not random.
That's not random, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Is that what they did, or did they mix them in before they set aside the shipment for the specific cities?
Well, I have a question, because Lynn's contacted them. Who did you speak to? I mean, when you called up, was it like, we don't know what the heck you're talking about? Or was it, oh, we know exactly what you're talking about. Let me talk to this person who is the head of this program or something.
Yeah, I think they were aware of what was going on. There wasn't any backpedaling when I asked about it and wanted some clarification. And then we reported in our story that the Stamp Fulfillment Services manager, it was something that he had come up with, but they didn't run that idea through all the appropriate channels to include, from what was reported to us, the legal side of the house. As we quoted whichever postal spokesperson it was, I can't remember right now, saying, you know, there were legal issues surrounding giving away postage for nothing.
That was a joke to me when I read that.
That was the
they have no problem
that,
with
that.
All
to me
that.
Sounded like about the lamest excuse there was. That's really the way it came across.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we did this terrible thing, and it's because we gave it away for free. No, it's because you said you were going to randomly distribute these things and you didn't.
Because you knew where they were, which makes it not so random.
I have all faith that government and government entities pretty much 100% of the time tell the truth, because you really don't get any lies out of like Washington, D.C. But I just find it hard to believe them. Well, okay, yes, that was a joke. Yes.
we're all trying to stifle laughter very, very.
We can laugh or not.
Cash has his practice deadpan. When he's making fun of things.
I think they shot themselves in the foot, and what I really sincerely hope is that this doesn't get so bad that they say, listen, we're going to fix it, we're going to do another lottery, we're going to give away 5,000 sheets, everybody who wants one send us $12.
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to do that.
I don't think there's a 0% chance. I think that the chance of that happening is more than zero, unfortunately.
Well, we shall see.
Yep.
We shall see.
I know a lot of, 18 people who are probably very, very pissed off right now.
Hmm. Well, the ones that went and spent money. But, you know, even like Dave Robinson, you spend $40,000 on postage to find one of these things. At the end of the day, you still have $40,000 in postage left.
Well, but and those aren't the people who I'm even talking about.
No,
I'm
but
talking about the people who purchased them, but not the people who found
no,
them.
No, but he can't say that, well, he only sort of broke even after finding it.
Oh, well, that was
no, he still has the $40,000 in postage.
That's a
in addition to the right side up pain that he found.
Yeah, that's a foolish statement. It was probably taken out of context or something, because obviously if you get all your money back and you still have $39,988 worth of postage, I think you're ahead of the game.
I understand he can't possibly use it all on letters himself.
Hey, we'll buy it. We need postage.
And which means he'll probably sell it at a small discount off of face value. But still, he's got a fair chunk of change there.
Yeah, I read his article. That's something that he kind of did sort of fail to mention.
Yeah.
So what happened to the rest of the stamps? You still have them, right? So.
Well, I know I bought some.
Plus, you can go through and there are some cool varieties like the broken wheel and stuff you can search for. Different placements.
Yeah. What else do we have, Jessica?
Okay.
Actually, I have one other thing. From a standpoint of listing, does the fact that they gave them away really... If you listen to the last 10 podcasts, I've said it. I think they should be listed in Scott's. But now, with this one, I'm kind of like on the fence now. And before it was like, you guys are foolish for not listing it. And now it's like, I'm not so certain. You know, this is like a fiasco. I think maybe it does deserve a footnote.
Well, we're still mulling over exactly what we want to do. I mean, right now it is the upright sheet is mentioned in a footnote accompanying the listing for the normal sheet. But we've still got some deliberating to do before we come down on one side or the other, whether or not we would list it or just leave it in the footnote.
I honestly haven't looked at a 2015 catalog. What does it say?
It's just a general description of the 100 of them were printed with the...
And randomly...
Oh, it doesn't give any price or anything?
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think at some point there will be a price in the footnote, just like there is with a lot of footnotes.
Yeah.
But as far as being in an album, I don't think it'll ever be in an album.
Oh, I disagree
with
that.
Well, actually, it may. I mean, C3A, the original inverted Jenny is in... The Scott National album.
No, the album and companies charge per page.
Yeah.
If they can put an extra page in, which they will, it'll have its own page. If they can increase their page count by one, they're going to do it because it makes them money. There's no question about it.
I don't know how much of that is true.
About what? About whether the
one single
album page. Companies want to make money?
Well, but I don't think it makes that much difference, one page.
Oh, yeah. Over all the supplements that are issued, it makes a huge difference.
This week in Stamp Collecting in History, January 21st, 1999. In one of the largest drug busts in American history, the U.S. Coast Guard intercepted a ship carrying 4,300 kilograms of cocaine. A new 2015 Forever Rate stamp coming out later this year honors the United States Coast Guard for its tireless role in defending our nation and its waters, as well as continuing investments in maritime interests. You can find more at USPSstamps.com.
I love the stamp because they are protecting us with a helicopter and a square rigger ship, which I'm sure will chase down those bad guys as long as they also have square rigger ships.
It looks kind of like bookends, like then and now. I hope that's not the ship they use.
How much? I'm off on my metrics. How much is 4,300 kilograms?
About double it. It's 2.2 pounds.
2.2 pounds per kilogram.
So it's about 9,000 pounds of coke.
That's more than a little bit.
Yeah.
They should issue cocaine stamps, you know, cocaine tax stamps, so I can put them with my marijuana tax stamps.
Yeah, but cocaine's kind of still illegal.
Well, yeah, so is marijuana. They still sold the stamps.
Oh, yeah.
Narcotic stamps tax cocaine, but they stopped.
Yes.
When they stopped? In the 1930s sometime? Anyway, interesting stamp.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a very attractive stamp.
Okay, updates. I believe Cash has some corrections he wants to make.
Well, I luckily didn't make any faux pas at Orco Expo, but I do want to say that inside of the Lens magazine, and there is a ad from Bob Dumain from Sam Houston Duck Company, and it has a really, really good color reference for an RW13A, the bright pink. Along with the normal one. So everybody should pull out their Lens. And I would be saying this even if you weren't here. This is a great color sample for you to clip out this and keep it with your collection to look for this rare color variety. It's a really, really good representation. I mean, it's spot on color. It's great. Second thing is I want to tell everybody that I acquired yesterday the latest known chicken stamp on cover. So Steve Patillo got a piece of mail 2 days ago, and it had chicken stamps on it. So I have the latest known until somebody uses one later, which I'm sure will never happen because I think we're running out of chicken stamps.
There's definitely a national shortage.
Yes, that's it. Oh, well, there's one thing that you didn't mention is the Coast Guard stamp. It's an oil painting. And I was wondering if they have a giclée of it also.
I'm sure they will. Sorry, that's one of our long-term running jokes. This painting on the wall behind Scott came from that joke. That is a Viking chicken giclée.
Nice. Very nice.
Tom actually found him one.
Okay, listener question. Benji Clark wanted to know, what if someone wanted to send you fan mail? I believe Scott has the answer to that.
Well, if you want to send us a fan mail or ask a question by mail, which we always love to receive letters, you can mail them to us at Stamp Show Here Today at Post Office Box 6170, Newport Beach, California, 92658. And we'll be happy to read your mail on the podcast
and don't
answer any questions that you have. Yep. Oh, yes, and please use stamps, because we are stamp collectors.
We are all stamp collectors here.
I want the first Stamp Show Here Today cover.
Oh, I would. That would be cool, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So whoever sends the first one, make it really colorful.
Okay, and our stamp stories this week. Last year, there was criticism about last year's focus on pop culture. This year's previews have been very tame. What do you think about 2015 previews? Tell us at hashtag stamp stories, hashtag new stamps.
Why would anybody complain about pop culture? I'm curious.
I'm not sure of even what the criticism was.
Well, I think it has to do with older stamp collectors prefer historical type subjects for their stamps.
So there's
Joplin or Jimi Hendrix.
Exactly. But we covered Batman.
So certainly not Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, that's just way too recent.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there you go.
I understand you're trying to cater to a wide audience, and you can't please everybody. But
yeah,
we need stamps
with Benjamin Franklin and George Washington exclusively, and please make them all red and black. That's it.
Yes.
No, red and green.
Green?
Green.
Who gets green?
I can alternate.
No. I don't know who the criticism was, although I heard some people saying, what the heck is Harry Potter doing on a stamp? Plus, it's a living person, supposedly not a living person. Who is actually a living person?
Well, you listen to all these old guys, I assume they're old, complaining that the stamp hobby is dying, we need to get new collectors in, yet they don't want stamps that would appeal to young collectors. Which is kind of where the disconnect is there. They say, we only want historic subjects, things that don't relate, that young people can't relate to, and they poo-poo when the post office issues stamps that the young people can relate to.
Well, they did history. They did the Batman. They had the four different Batmans through history.
It's not like Batman's new yesterday.
Yeah. And Harry Potter, they were historically, covering the whole Hogwarts thing that happened.
In real life?
Well, I read it in a history book somewhere. I think it was my grade school history book. Had a whole chapter on Harry Potter and the Byzantines. I think they were related to each other somehow.
Okay, our expert topic this week, we're actually going to welcome our guest, Chad Snee.
Again.
Thank you all for having me on the show.
I'm going to read his official bio according to lens.com, and then I'm going to ask him for his unofficial one at the end. Charles Chad Snee is the editor of Lens Stamp News and Scott Publishing Co. Scott produces the Scott brand of postage stamps catalogs, which includes a 6-volume worldwide Scott standard postage stamp catalog, and the Scott specialized catalog of United States stamps and covers, and the Scott classic specialized catalog of stamps and covers 1840 to 1940. Snee is an accomplished philatelist with 15 years of professional editorial reporting and writing experience in the stamp hobby media. In 1999, he was hired as an associate editor for Lens Stamp News, where he worked for 7 years, eventually rising to senior editor in 2003. Following a Navy Reserve deployment to Afghanistan, Snee enjoyed the Scott editorial staff in 2007, In 2011, he became editor of Scott Catalogs. In January 2014, he assumed his current duties as editor of Linz and Scott. He enjoys collecting stamps of Ireland and Scandinavia, as well as United States postal history. Snee and his wife, Lynn, have been married for 22 years. They reside in Troy, Ohio, and there are three daughters, Caitlin, Charlotte, and Margaret. So don't take this too seriously, but tell us your unofficial bio.
Unofficial bio. Wow. Where to start? I would say first, I consider myself a devoted husband and a loving father. Those two things are pretty critical to who I am as an individual. I've always believed your family comes first. And there are very few things that give me more joy and pleasure than to spend time with Lynn and our girls. So I guess you could say I'm a family guy. I've enjoyed the hobby, obviously. It's not every day that somebody can make a living through a hobby. So that's a pretty unique set of circumstances, and for which I'm thankful. It's been an interesting ride up to this point. So that I think about covers it, and well, we can get into it.
What did you do before Linz? Obviously, you did spend some time in the Navy.
I did. I was on active duty for about 5 years, and was casting about trying to figure out what I wanted to do after I left the service. Lynn was working at the time, and I was moving down the path of being a high school teacher. And
what subject?
Science, biology, and chemistry. And after my annual contract at the school where I taught was not renewed, I went back on the substitute teaching list, and it was during that time, this was late 1998, when there was an opening on the editorial staff at Linz, and I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose. Why don't we, you know, so polished up the resume and sent it in, and they called me up and then asked me to come up for an interview, and how does that go? The rest, as they say, is philatelic history, I guess. So,
I'm curious, how did you get into stamps?
Through my uncle, I guess. He still has a fairly nice U.S. collection, which I remember looking at as a youngster and being pretty impressed. And he, for one of my birthdays, gave me a Glassine mint sheet file, you know.
Oh.
And he had a couple of sheets in there as gifts. I think one of them was the Boston Tea Party sheet, the 8-cent Boston Tea Party, and the other was the CAPEX, the 13-cent CAPEX sheet. So I think from that initial introduction, that kind of got me going as a kid. And was pretty avid about it up until I, you know, got into high school, and then let it, you know, slide for a little bit. And of course, college, too busy with other things. But
like all of us,
this is the typical, pretty typical progression. And after Lynn and I were married in the early 90s, and we were living out here in California, as it turns out, I started to plug back in a little bit more and started attending some of the local shows and stayed with it pretty much steadily, off and on ever since.
So what do you collect yourself?
A couple of areas in the United States. I do postal history primarily, not so much stamps anymore. I write a column in Linz called Dollar Sign Stamps. I'm a big-time collector of dollar-denominated stamps on cover, mainly the modern ones, not the classic older ones. I don't have any Colombians on cover, the 1892 Colombians, that is. I also collect the postal history of my town in Ohio, Troy, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And every so often, when I can find a nice one, I like to pick up World War II POW covers, the ones mailed from the United States to the service members in the camps, both in the European theater and in the Asian theater. And as it says here in the little bio there, I do like the stamps of Ireland. We've got heritage there on my dad's side of the family.
Got a lot of people here doing the same.
And Scandinavia is fun because of all the stamps that Czeslaw Swania engraved. So I like to like to collect those.
You mentioned dollar values on cover. I collect like express mail stamps on big, huge express mail envelopes. I don't see very many high value stamps coming on cover anymore. I mean, what are you finding? Where are you finding? Obviously, at Lind, you have sort of a larger mailing group, but I'm finding the dollar value stamps are very uncommon now passing through the mail.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think for the most part, the only way you're going to find them is to get plugged in with another collector who might send you something, or you send something to another collector and ask that they return it. I mean, I've done that with a handful of the Jenny Invert panes, sending them to interesting destinations overseas. And I send them registered so that I have justification for spending the $12, and it doesn't look ridiculous on a small envelope. But I have uses to Fiji, Israel. I'm waiting on one from Nepal. Where else? Denmark. Maybe one or two other locations that escape me right now. But anyhow,
I remember I got a whole collection of bank tabs with from the Federal Reserve, because I'm sort of an economist dude and I collect economic stuff. And they had huge denominations on it. But otherwise, I don't see that much stuff. You must have a good search eye.
Well, it's the funny thing about it is that the dollar sign stamps column often brings interesting things my way when collectors send me pictures of cool things they found, and then all of a sudden I've got another subject for a column. So that works out nicely, for sure. But a lot of the more recent stuff that I have are just things I've either done myself, or sometimes I'll ask a family member if they're going to mail something, use stamps on the package, or just recently when my mother was visiting us over Christmas break, she is in the habit of sending a few things ahead of her arrival, and then she just mails them back right before she leaves. So we did up a parcel for her, and I got it all set up and took it to the post office and got it nicely franked with an express mail stamp and a couple other dollar stamps, and I put pencil marks in a rectangle around the top of the parcel so that she would know where to cut it out and have it look nice when I got it back, and it was waiting for me when I got to her house around noon today after I flew in from Ohio.
Cool. The medium rate priority mail flat rate box is $12.65 now. So a complete inverted Jenny sheet plus 65 cents.
That would be a nice use. It sure would.
Plus it's on nice heavy cardboard, so it doesn't get banged up.
Yeah, I just sent two of those to my mom, so I know, and that's what I used. And she told me she peeled them off.
You got the whole sheet on there?
I got the whole sheet on there, and I had it nice, and it was everything had stayed right where it was supposed to, and no overlapping or anything like that. And I was so proud of myself when I got those on there, and they didn't move around or float at all. And then she had to go and peel them off, and I'm just dreading to see what they turned out like.
I use a little trick to get those to get the backing paper off so that the stamps stay in place. You put Post-it notes on the top.
That's what I did.
Yeah,
that's what I did. I put one over I guess it was the vertical perforation lines. So I used four Post-it notes on each one, and then I had a heck of a time trying to peel off the corner of the
sheet.
Yeah,
you have to kind of just flick at it a little bit, and then it'll pop up, and then you can just peel it off.
I know I ruined one sheet. I had to go to another one. I ruined one on the corner.
And then this is what we use for removing them.
Hold it up to the mic.
Yeah, here you go. pure citrus orange air freshener. I buy mine at
Walmart.
Well, I actually get mine at Home Depot.
Oh.
And this right here, you spray it on the Jenny's, actually almost all the self-sticks, and it'll liquefy the gum so you can take them off.
I haven't found a self-stick that it doesn't work on yet.
Does it work well on the Wave series?
Yes.
Those are always a pain in the neck.
Yeah. Well, their problem is just they're large, so they wrinkle as you pull them up.
figure out how to do that. I haven't had any trouble with it. So.
So here's a burning question. What kind of technological investments can we look forward to in 2016 for the catalog?
On the technology side, I think we're going to continue to push forward with adding some different titles to the e-catalog lineup that we have. Probably some more individual country catalogs and so forth. Ultimately, of course, we hope to have a true online catalog that would be probably subscription-based and would allow you, you know, full access to the...
Well, I know a number of years ago, Stanley Gibbons put their catalog online, but they didn't include varieties. And Stanley Gibbons has tons of varieties, yes, especially in the earlier stuff. But they put the basic listings online, and they were free to use. But if you signed up and paid for a subscription, you could kind of track your collection,
right,
what you had, and it would also give you access to all those varieties as well. And they kept the values current, and as long as you were paying the monthly subscription, all of that stuff was available, yep, to you. And I thought that was a really good idea. And as you were talking about the online catalog, is that something that you've thought of?
Oh, for sure. I mean,
kind of doing.
I think we would like to get there at some point, but there are just a lot of challenges inherent with building something like that. Yeah. It's a pretty complex endeavor.
Yeah, I think the hard part is it kind of makes the print catalog less. People are less likely to buy the print catalog because of the huge costs involved.
Oh, and it's so convenient, too. I'll go to the show, I'll put all six volumes in my back pocket, mm-hmm, and just walk around and, you know, look up a stamp really quick every now and then.
Just stick it in the pocket again.
Yeah.
You read my mind. That was going to lead me to ask, I'm curious, do you know, would you be able to talk about if you have an Android app in the future that you're thinking about?
I think so. Yeah, we certainly want to be able to have the catalogs available on as many platforms as possible. But again, it's balancing the resources available to us and the time commitments involved to get all those things done. Those are things that we have to consider moving forward. But yes, I mean, ideally, we want to have the catalogs wherever people can access them.
Well, Amos
digitally.
Amos is a huge publishing company. You do coin as well as, I believe you also do cards. Baseball cards and dolls, don't you?
No. We have just four major areas that we focus on: the stamp collecting, coin collecting, automotive through our Cars, mm-hmm, and Parts brand, and then we have craft ideas, crafts and things, which is for people that like to needlepoint, paint, and do, you know, home projects, and that kind of thing. Yep.
So you could do needlepoint app.
Perhaps.
Don't know what that would look like, but...
Needlepoint stamps.
Needlepoint stamps, yeah. Put the two together, needlepoint and stamps.
Yeah. What's next, Jessica?
So we'd like your thoughts on the Circa sheet. We've talked about the upright Jenny Invert already, but what about album spaces provided by album printers?
Well, in general, for our album pages, we tend to provide space for anything that's going to receive a major catalog number. Minor listed items, and I think were we to decide to list any of the things we're talking about here right now, they would almost certainly be minor listings. They wouldn't have a full major Scott catalog number. So in that sense, there necessarily wouldn't be an album space provided for them, but having that number associated with them would certainly make it easier for collectors and dealers when it comes to organizing and inventorying stock and so on. I mean, that's an important consideration for us. We need to, you know, weigh that too when we're making these kinds of decisions.
I think the catalog, I know, because I've talked to you and I've talked to Jim Kletzel about listing policies. But ultimately, the catalog is for the collector and the dealer to be able to have a common language to trade in these items.
Absolutely.
And so if it doesn't have an actual number listing or a minor lettered listing or whatever, it makes it much more difficult. And then these items just kind of go away out of the marketplace, and I don't think that's good for the hobby.
No, I mean, I agree with you. That's true. I mean, it's a balancing act. We have to at times take a given issue and look at it carefully and weigh in the balance what our listing criteria say, but there's room to maneuver, and I think at times maybe exceptions can be made. I mean, these are unusual examples here. I mean, the upright Jenny sheet for certain has just been unlike anything the Postal Service has done before. I mean, it's been great for us. We've had good stories come out of it and whatnot, but it's a real different animal, if you will. And in some respects, so are the circus sheets, the ones with and without die cuts. The without coming from the press sheets. And then again, for the first time, the Postal Service produces an item that you can only acquire through an ancillary product. Again, that's new ground for them. And it's, in that sense, new ground for us as far as trying to figure out, all right, what do we want to do with this? I mean,
I know it's similar to what Australia has done. They've been doing that for years. And I know the way that you deal with that, and it's mostly through footnotes.
Correct.
But
again,
is this, when you go back and think about it, is that the right way to call it? Especially for this, and I mean, are they going to try and do this again next year or the year after? Or is this going to be just kind of like a one-time deal that
it could become the norm.
Yeah, it could become the norm.
Well, me and Tom were talking at lunch about that.
Yeah, we were discussing, some of our listeners know there's a few of us in here who collect pins, mostly Disney-related pins, and Disney's been one of those that's known for years that they'll put out a set, and then they may put out a boxed set after that that has the same pins you could buy individually, but they have what they call completer pins, which are you can only get these if you buy the box set. And that's almost the turn that they seem to be taking with something like this is, you know, hey, you get this cool stamp if you buy the yearbook and all the stamps at the end of the year.
This is like a completer stamp.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah.
That is kind of a cool
idea.
In a manner
of speaking, yeah.
If you list a value for it, I think there is a world of difference between if you just put a note saying that it exists. If you put a value for it, people will seek it. If you don't put a value for it, I think that people might acquire it just for completion every now and then. But I think the value side of it is really the driving force on whether you list it or not. Whether you give it a number or not, do you give it a value?
I know that the albums that Amos publishes, you'll follow whatever you decide on as far as that. But I do know that other publishers like Lighthouse generally do issue pages or supplements that will include spaces for these kind of items. Whether they're listed or not, because in their view, they're clearly collectible and they're clearly issued by our Postal Service and they're valid for postage, so therefore they belong in those albums. And I just wonder if people are aware when they make their choice in album, are they going to choose something that has that in there or not? And what would be the general preference? For those who do have albums, would they want to see the spaces in their albums for those things? Even if they're only footnoted, would they like to see space? Because they are fairly common.
Well, I know one album company.
The imperfect souvenir sheets for the
circus. That's what I was just going to comment on.
Are basically selling for a little over double face value on eBay. 2 to 3 times face value right now.
But the ones inside the books are selling for between 75 and 100.
Yes.
So... But I was just going to comment on it. I know a page company which is making their pages and they're setting it up so that if you get two sets of pages, you can have one of them for the imperforated and one of them for the perforated of every issue. And if there wasn't a press sheet, they have it on a different page. So they are looking at... these other varieties. But again, it's like I said, it's to get the page count up. If the more pages, the more money they make.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. But I think a lot of collectors are also driven by, not necessarily, especially with topical collectors, but a lot of regular collectors who collect by country are driven by completeness a lot of times. And they want to see those things that they see in the market. They want them in their album, and they want one of each. And hence, I mean, I was kind of disappointed when the yearbook came out and there were stamps missing. There were stamps missing because they couldn't get the licensing.
The Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. So I was really
plus all the general issues.
Well, the Postal Service has been doing that by design for a number of years now. You get the commemorative pack when you buy the yearbook, but then, oh, by the way,
if you really want
everything else that's been issued, we'll sell you a separate pack of stamps for an additional cost.
Right, and that's fine. The book is geared toward the commemorative stamps, and that's fine. Selling a separate pack, but I think they could do a better job of marketing the fact that there is a separate pack for those other stamps or postal stationery items or whatnot.
So having you here as a spokesman for Linz, we can definitely quote you when we say, given the circus sheet and the Jenny sheet, we have to wait and see what happens.
Yes, at this point. that's right.
So you're committing to being noncommittal.
I guess in so many words.
See, we don't spare our guests.
Okay, so I was wondering, what is the submission process if you have a suspected new stamp?
Meaning to...
Like a new variety or color?
Oh. Well, it's relatively simple. I mean, usually when we get a call or an email or something or letter, if somebody thinks they have something scarce, very unusual that could have potential high dollar value and whatnot, and we don't list it, our recommendation almost without exception is that they submit the item to be expertized. We want to see a reliable third party opinion on things like that. And usually that's all we would need if it comes back clean and the item is genuine to list it. In the U.S. Specialized, for example, when we can, we tell people in footnotes the earliest documented use for a stamp, either as a stamp itself or sometimes the EDU is based solely on a stamp on cover or whatnot. So if somebody claims they have a date that's earlier than what we show in the catalog, again, we ask, you need to have that certified. And then send us a copy of the cert and we can list it. For other things, maybe somebody has found a new perforation variety of a common stamp, and if it's half a gauge or more different in either the horizontal or vertical direction, well, that would qualify for a major listing. If it's like, say, a quarter perf off, in some cases we would minor it. But things like that, okay, send it to us. We'll take a look at it. We can perf it, and if we're confident that, in fact, it is different, that would get listed as well.
So out of all the calls that you take for these new suspected varieties and stuff, how many actually turn out to be legit?
Wow. I don't think I could put numbers or percentages on it. Sometimes when we tell somebody, hey, you need to have the item certified, that's the last we hear about it. I mean, you can draw your own conclusions from that, but I'd say it's probably the majority of items tend to come back good. I mean, we're usually dealing with folks that have enough hobby savvy that they've done a little bit of research ahead of time, so they're feeling fairly confident when they submit something that it's going to receive a favorable opinion. But I can't put, you know, hard numbers on, you know, how many things get listed out of how many calls or emails or letters we get for people wanting us to look at something.
So what do you think about the Young Friends of the APS?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Do you qualify?
I will for just another year. I'll be 49 in June. But I think it's a good idea. I mean, there needs to be more networking and times for affinity with the younger set in the hobby. And so I think it's a step in the right direction.
So the younger set, we need those young 49-year-olds to.
So, we want younger people to be interested in the hobby and to take it up. But the established hobby has been gray almost since its inception. I mean, go and look back at any of the old philatelic publications of photographs at exhibitions or at shows or what have you. What are you going to see? This, you know, sea of older, primarily gentlemen with gray hair. I mean, that hasn't changed that much.
Well, you get to a certain point in life.
Well, now they die now.
Well, but the thing is, we also really shouldn't ignore older folks as well. I mean, the boomer generation is now starting to retire. And for the next, 15 to 20 years, I mean, one of the biggest cohorts ever in the United States is suddenly going to have a whole heck of a lot more time. And for many of those people, disposable income on their hands. You know, they're gonna need outlets for that. So I think there's something to be said for going after those folks and showing them how pleasant and enjoyable collecting stamps can be. Remember what it was like when you were a kid and you went down to the post office and bought the latest issue? That would apply to some of them who shoved their album in their closet decades ago and haven't done anything with it.
Now I ask my son where the post office is, and he goes,
"What?
I don't know. What do I need to go there for?
Blue box on the corner, right?
You mean you can't email it?
He orders everything off of Amazon, and it comes right to his door. He never has to go to the post office.
True enough.
Or eBay.
But I think as time goes on, the hobby is going to take on a more historical type of a flavor. I mean, stamps will be viewed more and more, I think, in the future as historic artifacts. They are representative of a country's culture and history and events, time, places, people. So I could see more examples of perhaps colleges and universities starting to look into stamps more as a way to understand history and to draw conclusions about what was going on at a given amount at a given time, for just one example. That's where I think it's gonna go. The hobby will always be with us, but I think it's gonna be a much more concentrated and, yes, I think smaller, you know, group of people, but I think the hobby's still going to remain strong and interesting, and it'll always be there.
Well, I don't even think it'll be smaller. I see a lot more people getting interested, like you said, from the artifact standpoint.
Well, so therefore, they may not necessarily become collectors as we understand them, but they'll be stamp studiers. They'll be stamp analyzers, or however you want to put it.
Well, I mean, for us, the stamp world we can collect a little bit more generally, and I think in the future you're going to see a lot more people focusing. Even younger people, when they get into it, they're going to be limiting their collecting areas because there is just so much out there now, and not only with the material but with the information available.
For sure.
It can be just overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, as people who listen know, I always compare stamp collecting to coin collecting.
Yeah, I don't get that.
And I think stamp collecting is going to do exactly what coin collecting does. You don't have people who collect every coin from the world. I mean, there's probably one out there, so I don't want to insult them. But mostly you collect a specific thing. And it's not even all U.S. coins. And I think you'll have that with stamp collecting. I think you already really do. You have people like me who collect 1851 to 1859. But I think that there are going to be set popular areas, and I think one of them is going to be like Marilyn Monroe and James Dean and Star Wars and Harry Potter and all the Batman and everything that people are complaining about now.
And chickens.
Well, that's the new growing one that's just going to blow everything else away. Yeah, we're going to be sending you a lot of new listings for the chicken stamp. We're going to find some varieties.
Yeah,
that. And Cash means we by he and the mouse in his pocket.
Nice.
Yeah. How many eggs can you lay?
Yeah. None lately.
Lots, if you listen to his jokes.
Yeah, those are just bad eggs.
Exactly.
I want to know what's in that Jenny pack.
We're going to find out in just a moment.
Could it be? Could it be?
Well, I guess we'll have to find out.
All right. So, drum roll.
This one was not mailed to me by the fulfillment house. I bought this one from a post office.
That must lessen your chances right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it destroys all my chances whatsoever.
Wouldn't it be funny if...
But, here it comes. Normal.
Aww.
Normal inverted. It's an inverted Jenny Payne.
Okay, on that note, you can email us at stampshowhereToday@gmail.com. Twitter, Stamp Show HT. Facebook, Stamp Show Here Today. And our website is www.stampshowhereToday.com. With your questions and comments, you can now leave questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime. The number is country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to our Google Voice so you can make a call from any computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hello there, this is Chad Snee. I'm the editor of Lynn Stamp News and the Scott Publishing Company, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
I'm Brian Metz with OCStampStore.com with your stamp tip of the week. When you're looking at your 10-cent 1851 to 59 issue and you have eliminated Type 5, look at the bottom of the stamp. If you see complete shells that start at the side pearls and continue unbroken below the TE of 10 and the TS of cents, then you have found yourself a Type 1. For more U.S. stamp tips, sign up for my newsletter at OCStampStore.com.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.